gave her this tingly, warm feeling deep in her chest. Alice didn't know if it was love. She only knew that she liked it, and hoped she would always feel it. Alice hurried back down the stairs, more than ready to leave. She gave Elsa a final heartfelt farewell.
I hate you, and I hope I never see you again.
That's fine. It was all just business. You were nothing but trouble for me, but I made my profit.
That's good, because money is the only thing you will ever have.
She then turned to Waldo.
Can we go now, darling?
He nodded.
Yes, let's be on our way.
They headed out, him with his backpack and her with her blanket/sack slung over one shoulder.
So, what sort of monster are you?
Why do you ask me that? I thought you already knew what I was.
I know you were a great monster. I don't know which sort, though.
He opened the front door and exited. She followed on his heels.
You can't ask a girl something like that.
Why not?
It's very, very personal.
Are you a vampire by any chance?
A vampire? You mean the sort who drink blood and sleep in coffins?
Ick, no.
They don't actually sleep in coffins. Well, some do, but it's a lifestyle choice. As he approached the footbridge, Waldo noticed a mass of people waiting on the opposite bank.
I take it this tavern is very popular.
There were at least 100 of them. They were not trying to cross the bridge. Rather, they were all crowded in front of it, on the other side. They were staring at the two of them without anyone calling out a greeting. Alice did not like the looks on their faces.
We get our business late in the day and in the evening. I don't think those are customers. Maybe we should go back inside for a bit.
Why?
They don't look friendly to me. It might be best to wait before we cross.
They're just commoners. They wouldn't dare cause me any trouble.
He set foot on the bridge and began to cross it. As before, there was an unsettling creak with every step. Having gotten across safely once before, he ignored his concerns and stepped quickly.
I have a bad feeling about this.
She followed quickly after him. Waldo was not blind to the looks being directed at him, or to the mutters running through the crowd. But all of his life experiences had shown that ordinary people would not touch someone of his rank. It was not like they could actually be dangerous to him. As he neared, several voices called out, mocking him.
What are you doing here, you damn black wizard? Don't think about stealing our children.
Everyone knows what your sort does.
Get out of here! We don't like your kind!
A man pushed his way to the front and began to point.
You see? Harold Brower yelled. It's like I said, he's come to steal Alice. He's going to make her a slave.
Alice could see the already ugly mood of this mob being incited by Harold's words.
That's not so. He and I are married now, and I'm going with him because I want to.
So he really is kidnapping you,
Harold shouted. Others began to shout, hearing only what they wanted to and ignoring Alice's words.
You can't take her. We won't let you steal poor Alice.
Get out of here right now and don't come back.
Waldo stood there, trying to do his best to look down his nose at them. My familiar and I will be more than happy to do just that as soon as you get out of the way.
You're not taking her with you,
Harold yelled. Members of the crowd began to creep closer. Waldo held his ground.
Stand aside. Do you people know who I am? I'm a corpse lover. Back home, that would have sent all the commoners bowing and declaring how honored they were.
There was a moment of stunned silence. Then,
disgusting.
Monster.
Sick.
Wicked.
He does that with dead people?
He's going to kill Alice and do that to her. Get him!
When they surged forward, a dozen hands grabbed onto Waldo.
What is wrong with you people? Didn't you hear me? I'm a corpse lover! A corpse lover!
Too late, he tried to grab for his wand. Strong hands were gripping his arms and shoving him about.
Stop! Leave him alone!
Alice screamed.
Throw him in!
Someone shouted, and there was a roar of approval. Before he knew what was happening, Waldo was tossed over the railing and into the river. His backpack pulled him down into the water. Chapter 8. The Real Alice. The sheep do not rule over the wolves. That was a common saying in Alteroth, and one Waldo knew well. He'd been taught over and over again that it was the duty of the strong to rule the weak, and that the weak existed only to serve the strong. His entire life he'd known servants and slaves. Some tried to win his sympathies, while others tried as best they could to go unnoticed. Disobedience was rarely seen in Castle Corpse Lover. There was good reason for that.
Slaves were cheap and very easy to replace. Not only his mother, but every member of the family could get rid of a slave for any reason or no reason. Even Enver, who was just his mother's familiar, could kill a slave and walk away. No slave would dare to so much as speak a defiant word to him, never mind lay a hand on him. Waldo was taught to rule over the sheep, not to fear them. Knights, white mages, and monsters were dangerous. Ordinary people, mundanes, could never harm someone like him. So it didn't occur to him he might be in danger until they actually grabbed him.
"Throw him in!"
There was a roar of approval, and before he even knew what was happening, he was flung up and over the railing and into the river. As soon as he splashed in, he was caught in the current and sent rushing downstream. The weight of his backpack caused him to sink like a stone. The cold water was a shock. He could feel it pouring down his nose. Instinctively, he panicked and began to kick and flail about wildly. This did him no good at all. He sank deeper and deeper towards the river's bottom. "I'm going to die," he realized. He fought to somehow reach the surface. The part of his mind that was still rational searched for a spell that might save him, but nothing he had memorized would be of any help. Staring up into the watery blue, he could feel his lungs aching and the water still flowing down his nose. There was nothing he could do.
"I don't want to die like this. Mother, I'm sorry."
Alice watched in horror as her husband was tossed by the crowd into the river. She saw the large splash, and he was just gone. The people gave a huge cheer. Harold was the first to rush to her side. He put an arm around her and tried to pull her into his embrace.
"It's all right, Alice. You're safe now.
Her fist smashed into his face with a loud, clear crack as his jawbone broke and teeth spilled out of his mouth.
"What have you done?"
In fear, in rage, in panic, she lost all control and unleashed her power.
"Never show what you truly are," Elsa had warned her long ago. "All those people who like you would hate you for it. If they ever knew what you really were, they would put you to the flames."
All of her life, Alice had lived in fear, afraid of the day people would find out what she really was, afraid they would see her as ugly and horrible. Every single moment was spent hiding, even, especially, when surrounded by admirers. All she'd ever truly wanted was to find someone who would love and accept her as she really was, someone who she could feel safe with. She just wanted to stop being afraid. That was why Waldo was so amazing to her, even if he was strange. He'd sought her out knowing what she was, told her he wanted her despite the truth, touched her, kissed her, and made it feel so incredibly right. When his yellow eyes looked at her, she didn't feel strange. She felt like she was something precious. Waldo was the one she'd been waiting for her whole life. To Alice, he was the answer to every secret prayer. Seeing him murdered right in front of her filled her with an unimaginable fury. In her rage, she finally let her true self come out. The crowd turned their attention her way. The immediate reaction was surprise, both at her outburst and at seeing her hit Harold so viciously. Some of the men took half a step towards her, and then stopped. She was looking at them with such open hate.
"How dare you!"
she shrieked as her body shook.
"How dare you hurt him!"
She tossed aside her sack and twisted about in pain. There were cries and gasps from the crowd as they heard the sound of clothing, skin, and muscle tearing. As they watched, black, leathery wings sprouted out of Alice's back. They spread out and stretched at least 12 feet from tip to tip. A long, slim, lizard-like tail appeared and thrashed back and forth furiously. Her fingernails extended into razor-sharp talons. Above each ear, a short, curving horn grew. The rest of her remained as lovely as always, but in just a matter of seconds she had revealed herself for what she truly was.
"Monster!"
someone screamed. In an instant, the crowd that had been so angry and hostile was shoving and trampling each other as every one of them tried to run from her. Those who were too slow to move were pushed down and run over. They were all screaming for help. She recognized many of them, men who'd flirted with her and paid her all sorts of unwanted attention. Just one look at the truth sent them fleeing in blind panic. Slapping her wings down, she launched herself into the air.
This was the first time in her life she'd ever released her true form. She'd never once dared to, not even when she'd run away. The fear of being discovered had always been too strong to overcome. Now, though, the only thing she could think of was trying to save Waldo. Everything else was tossed aside. To her immense relief, she discovered that all of her natural instincts made flying as easy as walking. She flew high into the air as swiftly and gracefully as a hawk. The feeling of it, of defying gravity and rising up into the sky, was exhilarating. She didn't have time to appreciate it, though. Shifting her wings, she swung over the river and looked straight down, searching for him. All she could see, though, was the light shining off the water. Somehow, though, she knew where he was. Ever since he'd given her that magical kiss, she'd had a sense of him in the back of her head. When she'd been up in her room, she had been certain of the exact spot he was downstairs. She didn't know what this was exactly, but she took it as a gift from him, a way to make sure they were never parted. Pulling her wings in, she dived towards the water. He stopped flailing. It was useless. He was going to die, and there was nothing he could do about it. He wondered if, when his brothers and sisters had died, if it had been like this. Had their deaths also come as such surprises? Had they also thought about the sheer unfairness of it? He had never thought to ask Walter or Gwen. It didn't look like he'd get the chance now. Well, maybe Mom will bring me back as a spirit or something. She wouldn't get to recover his body, so being a zombie was out. Good, he thought. I'd hate to end up like Walter. His lungs were aching, and he was about at his limit. He wondered if drowning would at least be quick. He was still staring up at a watery blue above him. He thought he saw a winged figure coming. Despite his impending death, he wanted to laugh. An angel coming for me? Figures I managed to screw up even this. He'd failed to notice the sense of Alice approaching him. Just before she hit the water, Alice pulled her wings in completely and stretched out her arms. She hit the water in an almost perfect dive. Her eyes spotted him, and she kicked her legs and swam over to where he was. She could see him turn his face to her and was relieved that he was still alive. He was almost all the way to the bottom. His robes and his pack were pulling him down. With her powerful body, she was able to swim right down to him. Waldo got a clear look at her. He saw the horns and the folded-up wings and the whip-like tail. He recognized what she was. Succubus. Her left hand grabbed tight about his collar, and her right rose up, claws ready to strike.
She's going to kill me?
Wouldn't it have been easier just to let me drown? Her right hand slashed down. Once, twice, three times in quick succession. Just that quick, Waldo felt the weight pulling at him vanish. Both her arms wrapped around him, and they were rising to the surface. He held his breath to the very last second, and then opened his mouth when he just couldn't hold it any longer. He coughed and choked, and gratefully breathed in the air. Chapter 9. I can see you're happy. When they broke the river's surface, Alice heard him gasp and choke.
Darling, are you all right?
Waldo needed a minute just to breathe and fill his lungs.
I'm fine,
he managed between gasps as he coughed up water. Alice was holding on to him tight as they were being swept downriver.
Hold on to me, and I will get us to shore.
Keeping one arm around his chest, Alice used her legs and other arm to fight against the current and push them towards land. Having no idea how to swim, and having just nearly drowned, Waldo wrapped both arms around her waist and held on tightly as she pulled him along. Through their new bond, he could sense that she was worried for him. She had rescued him because she genuinely wanted to. That wasn't how it normally went. He knew most familiars would have been happy to just stand by and watch as their master died. A contract prevented a monster from physically harming a master, but if there was no direct order to help, they were free to just allow things to happen. With the master's death, the contract was dissolved, and they were free. Alice could have just let him drown, and then walked away able to do anything she liked. Instead, she had saved him, of her own free will.
I guess I'm lucky she's so odd.
Alice finally got them to the muddy shore. She dragged him out of the water and carefully set him down. Still breathing hard, Waldo just lay there, staring up at her.
Are you really all right, darling?
Waldo found it strange to hear concern from anyone other than his mother or Gwen.
I'm fine,
he reassured her, and then he said something he'd never expected to say to a servant.
Thank you for saving me, Alice.
This brought a wide smile to her face. She hugged herself and began to twist from side to side.
You're more than welcome. I'm your wife, after all. Just knowing you are all right makes me really happy.
I can tell.
Really?
Waldo nodded. I can sense your emotions through our bond. Also, your tail is wagging.
What?
Alice looked behind herself. Sure enough, her 3-foot-long tail was wagging just like a dog's might. Not knowing how to make it stop, she grabbed onto it with both hands and spun herself around a little. Seeing Alice literally chasing her own tail, Waldo couldn't keep from chuckling. Alice looked back at him mortified, while still holding on to her tail and being bent around.
Don't laugh at me! It's not funny! Why do I even have a tail?
It's just a normal part of succubus physiology. There's nothing unusual about it. Your tail is as natural as your wings or claws or horns. Alice let go of her tail and stood there with a look of disbelief.
What?
There was a puddle of still water near her. Alice looked straight down into it so that she could see her reflection.
I have horns?
She put her hands to her head and tried to cover them up. What's wrong? Waldo could feel her distress in the back of his mind. He could not read her thoughts or feel everything she felt, but strong emotions were easy to pick up.
What's wrong? I'm ugly.
She quickly turned her back to him.
I look hideous.
Waldo noted her tail was now drooping and lifeless.
No man would ever want to be with someone as repulsive as me.
You're acting like you're surprised by how you look.
I am. Before today, I'd never taken on my true form. I was always afraid to. But when I saw you in danger, I didn't think about it. Now that you see what I really am, you must be disgusted. You probably don't even want to touch me.
Waldo sat up and stared at her back.
I wonder if this is because she is a succubus or because she's a woman.
He knew how a proper dark mage would deal with a situation like this. A typical master would order his familiar to stop behaving so foolishly. The relationship between master and servant was based on authority and obedience. A dark mage didn't waste time dealing with his familiar's childishness. For some reason, though, Waldo could not bring himself to be so harsh to her. She had just saved his life, and even if she was just his familiar, he didn't think it would be proper to simply order her to behave. He got up and walked over to her, not sure what he was going to do. On instinct, he put his arms around her back and embraced her. Her folded-up wings pressed into his chest, and he could feel her tremble.
What are you doing?
Not knowing what the right response was, he just said the first thing that came to mind. I think you're beautiful, like this or in your human form. Alice normally hated being touched by men, but his arms felt comforting.
How did he know just the right thing to say?
She slowly leaned back against him. She liked the warmth of him, the feel of his body pressed against hers.
Do you really mean that?
Alice asked in a small voice.
You don't think I'm ugly?
No, you're lovely no matter what form you're in.
Thank you. It makes me happy to hear you say that.
I know. Your tail is starting to wag again.
Ah! Don't tell me that! It's so embarrassing!
Waldo just couldn't keep himself from laughing. Chapter 10 A Surprising Question. When Waldo eventually stopped laughing, Alice was able to calm herself.
I don't even know how I changed. It all just sort of happened.
She was staring at her claws.
I don't know how to turn back.
It shouldn't be hard. Enver would transform automatically with sunrise or sunset, but he could also change forms just by concentrating.
Who is Enver?
He's a vampire who serves my mother.
Your family has a vampire? Really?
Waldo felt a certain pride. My family has all sorts of monsters and undead as both members and servants. Alice shook her head slightly.
You come from a really strange place, don't you, darling?
No, where I come from is normal. It's this place that is strange. Anyway, just concentrate on how you want to appear, and you should change back to your human form.
Just concentrate?
Try it. Relax and think of your original self. Not having anything to lose, Alice shut her eyes and tried to picture the way she normally looked. After a moment, she felt a slight ache creep over her skin and muscles. Her wings collapsed inwards and melded into her back. Her tail seemed to be reeled in until it vanished from sight. Her horns and claws turned into a powdery dust and were blown away. In less than a minute, she was back to looking human. Opening her eyes, Alice saw her fingernails were back to normal. She patted the side of her head and then looked behind her.
She gave a relieved sigh and turned her attention appreciatively back to Waldo.
Thank you, darling. I was really afraid I wouldn't be able to change back. How did you know what to do?
I'm a member of the Corpse Lover family. I have an extensive education on many subjects, but I am particularly knowledgeable in the fields of monsters, magic, and the undead. I likely know more about succubi than you do.
Well, since I don't know a thing, you probably do. I mean, except for being an embodiment of lust and all that. Elsa made sure I knew that much.
Well, actually, something you may not realize is that succubi are
Achoo!
Waldo sneezed. Excuse me. He sneezed twice more.
Excuse me.
He rubbed his nose.
Oh, we need to start a fire and dry these wet clothes or we'll both come down with a cold.
We shouldn't really need to. It's a warm summer day and that horrible ball of fire is hanging above us.
Alice blinked. He certainly had his own way of talking.
I know the sun is out, darling, and that it's warm, but we're both soaked to the bone and our clothes are wet. Getting a chill is nothing to take lightly. I'll get a fire started.
The river had swept them a good distance from Stratford, and there didn't seem to be any farms or homes nearby. They were stuck in the middle of a forest by the river's edge. Alice began to gather up dried leaves and grass for tinder. She then stacked up fallen branches and sticks around them. She then took two sticks and began to rub them together.
I used to take care of the kitchen fires all the time, she explained. But there was always a flame already lit.
She rubbed the sticks together furiously.
I think this is the way to do it, though.
Here, let me. Waldo knelt down beside her. Pyro. A small flame came to life on the tip of his index finger. Waldo touched the tinder and kindling and the fire caught.
That's amazing.
Not really. Waldo negated the spell and the fire vanished from his fingertip. Even with my spellbook, there were a lot of spells I couldn't manage. All I have now are the ones that are memorized.
It's still amazing. I mean, you can do magic. What else can you do?
Right now? I could create fire, levitate a book, cast a detection spell, repel the undead, heal someone, and I know a number of wards and trap spells. It's not much.
What do you mean? Don't you know how amazing that is? How many people can use magic? It's like something right out of a story. That you can do so much only proves how talented you are. I can already tell you are going to do incredible things, and I am glad that I will be there to help.
Thank you, Alice. I hope I can live up to your expectations.
Thanking a servant twice in one day? Well, wonders never cease. You're welcome.
She glanced at the campfire that was now burning well.
Please take off all your clothes now.
Huh? Staring at the fire, she began to tug at some of her hair.
We both need to take our clothes off to let them dry.
I see. Well, I suppose that does make sense.
But you have to keep your back to me. I mean, I know we're married, but I want to wait until my heart is ready. You don't mind, do you? You said you would wait.
Waldo wondered if now would be a good time to tell her about the half-naked sex slave that were just part of the scenery in Castle Corpse Lover, or about the things that happened in the summer and winter solstice, or about the fact that with her blouse wet he could make out the exact shape of her breasts. He decided to save all that for another day. Turning his back to her, he began undressing. No, I don't mind. Ella stood there silently watching as he took off his shirt, then his boots and socks, and finally trousers and small clothes. Though she had grown up at the inn, and Elsa had done everything in her power to turn her into a soiled dove, this was actually the first time Alice had laid eyes on a naked man. Unlike most of the big, burly folk she was used to, Waldo was scrawny. He had pasty white skin and arms and legs that were sticks. He had delicate hands that were the opposite of the beefy paws she was used to. Alice thought he was cute and adorable. She especially liked his tight little ass. Her face blushed as she felt the sudden urge to clutch and squeeze with both hands. What would he say if he knew what she was thinking right now?
So, are you going to grab these? Waldo asked.
What? My wet clothes.
He held them out with one hand while keeping his back to her.
Do I give them to you, or do I put them by the fire myself?
I'll take them, darling.
Feeling embarrassed, she took his clothes and then quickly removed her own. She spaced them by the fire so they would dry as quickly as possible. They both wound up sitting down in the grass with their backs to each other as they waited.
I hope you're not feeling ashamed because I've seen you in your skin.
Not really, Waldo told her. My family doesn't have any issue with nudity.
If you don't mind my asking, why are you and your family so open-minded? I mean, is it because you're mages or because you come from another country? I've known some noble bloods, and I can tell you they are really traditional about things. They expect everything to be a certain way and won't put up with anything else. Why are you so different?
It's because I'm a corpse lover and an Alturithan, I suppose. We have our own standards as to what is proper and acceptable.
The people here, the nobles especially, would say that makes you barbarians.
I don't much care what Lethasians think about civilized behavior. In my country, commoners wouldn't dare talk back to someone of my status, never mind assault me. If this had happened in Alteroth, this entire city would be laid to waste.
Well, to be fair, the folk here wouldn't ever do that to a knight or a lord. It's just that there are a lot of stories about dark mages.
What sort of stories?
Well,
Alice tried not to offend him.
People say they steal away children and virgin girls, that they rob merchants, cast curses, raise the dead, and summon evil souls to serve them, that they kill all those who anger them or get in their way.
That's not wholly correct.
Really? Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Mages, even dark ones, very rarely use curses, except when they're on their deathbeds. The laws of magic demand too high a price.
Ah, what about the rest of it?
Oh, the rest is pretty accurate. Take slaves, steal, raise the dead, kill. That's what we do.
Alice turned to look back over at him. Even you, darling?
Of course. I am a corpse lover. I intend to make a great name for myself and make my family proud.
Alice frowned as she looked at the back of his head. Wouldn't you rather just be a good man?
What do you mean? Instinctively, he turned his head around. He was rewarded with a clear view of her magnificent chest.
Ah, don't look!
Covering herself with both arms, she turned back around.
Sorry.
Waldo quickly turned back around as well.
Wait, why am I apologizing to her yet again? It's all right. I'm not angry.
Waldo felt relieved to hear that. Then he felt annoyed with himself for feeling relieved. Why should her opinion matter? His mother never cared what Enver thought or felt. There was a long, uncomfortable moment of silence.
Are you really going to do those things? Stealing and killing and all that?
Yes.
Why?
It's expected of me. It's what a dark mage does.
Is that the only reason?
It would make my mother proud.
But is it what you want to do?
That was a question he had never asked himself. He had always struggled to meet the expectations of his family. What I want is to be worthy of my family.
But do you want to kill and steal and all that?
If it will make my family proud, then yes. He heard Alice give out a long sigh. She asked him no more questions. Chapter 11. Why He Missed His Black Robes. Sitting in the grass with his back to Alice, Waldo slowly turned a thin knife in his hands. He was not strong, physically, but at least he'd been blessed with long, nimble fingers. Waldo could handle a dagger surprisingly well. He held the tip of the blade between thumb and forefinger, and slowly turned it around and around. Along with the clothes that were drying right now, this and one other knife were all he had. Waldo's spellbook, wand, maps, spell components, other clothes, travel supplies, and even his robes were all gone now, lost somewhere in the river. When the euphoria of still being alive passed, he thought about just what to do now. During the weeks spent on the road, he'd burned the destinations on the map into his memory. Taking the dagger, he drew the names of three cities into a patch of dirt. Stratford, Middleton, Norwich. With deliberate care, he drew a line through Stratford. The map hadn't provided any more information than just their locations, so it was no loss. His wand had always been pretty much useless, though he would miss it, as it had been a gift from his mother. All his coin had been spent to acquire Alice. His other daggers, clothes, water skin, and most else in his backpack could be replaced. It had always been his intention to steal whatever he needed on a daily basis. That was only sensible, as it would both provide him good practice as well as help him save. The items he would really miss would be his spellbook, his various components, and his robes. A spellbook was every magic user's most prized possession. It contained all his acquired knowledge. So long as you had one, and time to study, dozens or even hundreds of spells were available to you. For Waldo, many of the spells had still been useless. There were, however, pages and pages of defense, healing, and general use magic that would have been valuable. He would need to keep reciting the few spells he had memorized over and over again. If he forgot them, they would be lost as well. Recipes for potions were also lost now, though he thought he might be able to recall some of them. Getting his hands on a new spellbook was going to be difficult.
Very few people in the world had the ability to use magic. That was the reason Altaroth was feared and respected, even when the whole world hated her. It was also the reason why the nations feared Avalon, though the wizards of the Misty Isle tried to act as advisors and diplomats. Magic was a rare and wondrous sight outside of those two lands. That meant the chances of his finding a replacement spellbook were very slim. He missed his black robes nearly as much. That was not due to any pragmatic reason. The robes did not grant him any sort of magical power or protection. They were tailored silk, nothing more. They just represented who and what he was. Without them, the mundanes wouldn't know he was superior to them.
"The clothes are dry now, darling," Alice said from behind him.
"Good." He stood up, careful not to turn his head around. He kept facing away as she handed him his clothes, and as he got dressed. "Is it safe for me to turn around?"
"Yes, darling, it's fine."
When he did so, he saw her in a tight-fitting white blouse and long skirt. She was shifting from foot to foot and tugging at her long red hair with one hand. Looking at her, Waldo felt an annoying mix of emotions. He was deeply grateful to her for saving him. He felt pride in having a genuine great monster as his familiar. Despite her bizarre ideas, he found that he genuinely liked Alice. Her simple devotion and protectiveness were endearing, as was the faith she had in him. At the same time, she just did not have the right attitude. She spoke to him freely, without even a trace of fear, assumed they were equals and refused to even acknowledge him as her master, asked him questions and brought up issues that bothered him in unexpected ways. Despite having been the fat woman's slave, Alice was shockingly bad at it.
"So, what do we do now?"
Alice was still shifting from side to side. "We'll head to Middleton. From what I remember from my map, it should be north of here."
"You talked about going there before, darling. It's part of your quest, isn't it?"
Waldo nodded.
"Well, if it helps, I still have my money."
She patted the bulging leather pouch tied to her hip.
"I lost everything else, but I held on to this."
"You have money? Slaves aren't allowed to own anything."
"Elsa let me earn and keep tips. She believed it would motivate me to work harder."
"Really?" Waldo said in surprise.
"Yes, I hoped I could eventually buy my freedom, so it did make me work hard."
"Hmm, well that's interesting." The idea of rewarding slaves for good behavior was not totally unknown in Altaroth. Only members of the seven families were considered to be free citizens. Everyone else was a slave or servant. That did not mean they were all treated exactly the same. The serfs who lived in the countryside and raised the food could not leave the land they were bound to, but were lightly supervised. So long as they produced the food required, they were usually allowed to live, marry, and raise families however they pleased. In Altar and the other cities were a large number of skilled workers. Masons, carpenters, blacksmiths, weavers, glassmakers, and other such. They worked in the business district, assigned to their profession, making not only whatever their owners needed, but filling orders for others as well. Everything still belonged to the family that owned the worker. Slaves were not permitted to own anything, not even their own bodies. However, they also did not have to pay for rent or food or clothing or anything else. Their needs were all provided for by their masters. And if they were especially skilled and productive, it was not unusual for them to receive special comforts or be granted certain indulgences, such as being allowed to choose who to marry, or being permitted one day in 10 to rest. Unlike the serfs, the skilled workers were not permitted to marry as they pleased, and had to get permission from their owner. The children were automatically slaves and valuable property, so marriage and the raising of family was as much a matter of commerce as anything else. It was extremely rare for a worker to be permitted to marry a slave with a different owner. When it did happen, one owner usually bought the property of the other. This avoided problems with ownership of the children. Like the serfs, the skilled workers or artisans were not permitted to leave the city where they labored, or go into a different profession. All the children were expected to be taught the same trade. Serfs and skilled laborers could, of course, be sold or whipped or killed like any other slave. But in general, unless they had committed some heinous offense, it was considered wiser to simply leave them be. They had a role to play in the economy, and replacing them was usually considered more trouble than it was worth. The ones who had it worst were the castle slaves and the manual laborers, the unskilled slaves. They were the class most likely to be abused and killed. The former because they were in close contact with their masters, the latter because brute labor could be done better and more cheaply by undead. So they were normally worked to death, raised, and kept working. The castle slaves were taught to be especially obedient and pleasing because any member of the ruling family could kill them at any time.
Maybe that's the problem, Waldo thought. Alice is used to being treated like a skilled worker slave, not a castle slave.
Familiars were actually treated very indulgently, far better than most any other servant. They were valuable and extremely hard to replace. But that didn't mean they got to put on airs and pretend to be equals. There were limits to how indulgent you could be. He planned to treat Alice well, but she needed to understand her proper place.
"Want to see how much I have?"
"What?" Alice shook the purse.
"Want to see how much I have? I never bothered to keep track. I just kept it hidden away."
"Certainly." Kneeling down, Alice carefully poured the coins out into the grass. Waldo noted there was no gold. There was the reddish glint of copper along with flashes of silver here and there. Alice's hands moved quickly, with practiced ease. She first separated out the silver, and then began silently counting out the copper ones and stacking them into one pile after another. When she was done sorting everything out, she announced what she had.
15 silver dalters, 2 silver wolves, 1,223 copper coins, mostly tracks.
So you have the equivalent of 29 silver pieces and 23 copper, or 1 gold piece, 9 silver, and 23 copper. Alice stared at all the coins.
I've been working and saving all my life, and this is what I have to show for it?
Well, considering how low your station was, it's actually very impressive. Alice frowned.
Really?
What? You were a slave. Having anything is a surprise. He held his hand out. I'll take possession of them now. She began scooping them back into the leather pouch.
No.
Alice, as my familiar, whatever you have automatically belongs to me. As she tied the purse back to her side, she gave Waldo a shake of the head.
As your wife, I consider this to be our money now, but I will decide how we spend it.
You have the wrong attitude.
What do you mean? Men are always horrible with money. They waste it without a second's thought. I've seen men spend a whole month's wage on one night of drinking and whoring. So I will be the one who decides how we spend our coin.
This is not how the master-servant relationship works, Alice!
Well, I'm pretty sure this is how it works with husbands and wives.
You are supposed to obey me without question.
Alice sighed.
That's cute.
So, Middleton? Waldo was at a loss. Since he could not compel her with their contract, there was nothing he could do.
I can't even get her to call me master.
Yes, we're going to Middleton, unless you know of somewhere I can pick up a new spellbook. Alice blinked.
Oh.
Oh?
Well, I'm not sure, but maybe there is a place.
Really?
Waldo asked, suddenly very interested. Tell me more. Chapter 12. White, Dark, and Independent.
Well, as a barmaid, I got to hear lots and lots of different stories from folk all over Lothos.
Waldo nodded.
One of the stories I'd heard would be about this old hermit by the name of Roger who lives near the village of Bitford. They say he could make it rain or make the sun come up, that he could always tell when someone was lying, that he could cure sheep and cows, that he could find lost children. There was even a story about some bandits who came to Bitford. He drove them away when Roger summoned a dragon.
A dragon? Waldo repeated dubiously. Alice nodded her head.
That's what the stories say.
Well, if that's what they say, then I'm not sure it's true. Alice narrowed her eyes.
Lots of people told the same stories about him. An old hermit living in the woods who carried a wand and wore brown robes. People would come to him and ask for cures or help with crops or herds. He hardly ever leaves his home, so folk who need his help have to seek him out. I don't know if he could help with a spellbook, but I thought you'd want to know.
Well, I have my doubts about summoning dragons. Otherwise, he sounds like a hedge wizard to me.
What's a hedge wizard, darling?
It's what we call magic users with no formal training and no connection to a powerful house or a patron. They're also called local mages or unschooled mages. They're the weakest sort of independent mages.
Independent mages?
Waldo sighed. This was basic information, at least for someone like him who was born into one of the 7 great families. He was going to need to teach her quite a number of things. In the world, there are 3 types or schools of mages. White mages, dark mages, and independent mages. White mages come from the Misty Isle of Avalon. Dark mages, like me, come from Alteroth. Independent mages can come from any other country.
Oh, I've heard stories about the white mages of Avalon. They go around helping people and giving advice to kings and lords. They aid knights on quests and protect the common folk. Everyone says they're very powerful and very wise.
They're idiots.
So they're not good with magic?
No, Waldo admitted.
They're very skilled. In their own way, they are as well taught in the mystic arts as my people. They're idiots because of their philosophy.
I thought they just liked helping people.
Waldo nodded.
They do. That's what makes them such idiots.
Darling, you're doing it again.
What?
Talking and not making sense.
All right, let me explain. The White Mages of Avalon have a philosophy based around unity, justice, and peace. Their ultimate goal is to unite the Shattered Lands into a single nation and rid the land of strife and injustice. They dream of returning to the days of the Amoran Empire, before the Shattering.
That's wonderful.
No, it's not! Can't you see what they're up to? It's obvious.
Helping people?
It's a plot to dominate the world. Those idiots go around telling people they're serving a higher cause. They go preaching about unity, justice, and peace, pretending to have no ulterior motives. They offer advice to local rulers and help the subjects, all while telling people about their ridiculous ideas and trying to convince them how much better the world would be if they would only join together under Avalon's leadership. It's all just one vast conspiracy to take over the world and destroy Alteroth.
Could it be they just want to help make the world a better place?
Don't be naive. Who thinks that way?
I do. I like helping folk.
You're not a mage. Wolves don't go around protecting sheep. It's unnatural. It's obviously all part of a conspiracy to secretly take over the world.
Darling, no one thinks the White Mages would do that. They're just good people.
She paused.
Well, I have heard a few nobles and merchants say they shouldn't be trusted.
Which only proves how effective their conspiracy is. They have almost everyone fooled.
People think it's the Dark Mages who want to rule the world.
That's just propaganda. Waldo waved the idea away. We're actually happy with things just as they are. Conquering more land would just mean the seven families would beat each other's throats over how to divide up the spoils. We don't want to conquer the world. We just want the world to think we want to conquer them, so they don't try and conquer us.
Darling, you sound paranoid.
How is it paranoid to think the White Mages and everyone else are out to get us? Alice gently patted his arm.
It's all right. I promise to protect you from the scary White Mages.
Waldo sent her a hooded look.
They don't sound so bad to me.
Did I mention they would put you to death if they could?
What? Why? What did I do?
You were born a succubus.
So? I'm a good person.
That's not the point. They want to create an ideal world, one without war, injustice, or strife. They also want a world without evil, which means no undead, no dark mages, and no monsters.
What do you mean, no monsters? What would they do with all of us?
Didn't you hear me say they would kill you if they could?
But, how is that just? Killing people simply because they weren't born human? Isn't that evil?
Waldo shrugged. Not to them. They're only interested in justice for their own kind. Their ideal world has no place for people like us.
I can't believe people could be that cruel. It makes what Elsa did seem almost merciful by comparison.
In any case, my original point was that magic users are divided between white, dark, and independent. In general, we and the whites are the strongest because we are the most thoroughly trained and have access to libraries filled with arcane knowledge. By comparison, most magic users from outside Alteroth and Avalon rely on the apprentice system. How well trained they are and what spells they have access to vary wildly. A lot of mages will actually join us or Avalon of their own free will just to get access to our knowledge. The weakest sort of independent is referred to as a hedge wizard. Most magic users will try to find a wealthy patron. They typically end up in some court or in the employ of someone rich. Hedge wizards, on the other hand, choose not to serve any particular master. They live on their own, often in the same place where they were born and usually deal with only the locals. Often they are never even apprenticed and are self-taught, or only acquire a few spells from occasional meetings with other mages. Since they lack any formal training and aren't in a position to acquire spells or arcane material, they are usually very weak. It's not unusual for a hedge wizard to only know one or two rudimentary spells, or how to brew potions, or have a small talent for telling fortunes. In Alteroth, we don't see them as real mages. The very idea that someone like that could summon a dragon is ridiculous.
Well, it was just an idea, darling. If it's no good, that's fine.
Waldo looked unhappy. He considered for a long moment. How far away is Bitford?
Not too far, I think. I never left Stratford, but it should be about a couple of days' walk to the west of here.
That was going away from Middleton. Going there would add a few days to his journey. I suppose it's worth looking into. Okay, we'll go there first and then head to Middleton.
Really? I thought you said he wouldn't be a real mage.
I'm not saying he is,
but even a hedge wizard will have a spellbook, or even just a few scraps of vellum.
Vellum?
Alice had never attended school, but felt like she was in one now.
It's a special sort of parchment that you can write magical inscriptions on.
If you write them on ordinary paper, they will light on fire when you read them.
Really?
Yes. Even if this Roger character is as useless as I think, it would still be worth visiting him just to get my hands on some vellum. At the very least, I could write down the spells I still have memorized and make a temporary spellbook. That's worth a few days' delay.
Chapter 13. Second Best. They were trudging through the forest away from the river. There was no path, and they were walking through bush and high grass. Waldo's eyes kept darting about the underbrush and the branches overhead with every chirp,
squawk,
and caw.
What a savage place this is. There's nothing to be scared about, darling. This close to Stratford, there are no wolves or bears.
I am not scared, Waldo said with great dignity as he stepped around a tree root. I am a corpse lover, and I fear nothing.
Of course. Though I'd rather not run into any more of those horrible creatures with those deformed long ears.
I wish I still had my map. Are you sure this is the way to get back to the road?
Alice nodded.
So long as we keep going away from the river, we're sure to run into it.
Waldo grunted. So far, the quest had been very much a mixed result. On the plus side, he had actually succeeded in making a contract with a great monster, something almost unheard of for a first quest. Were the circumstances normal, he would have turned right around and headed home. Returning with a succubus in tow would be plenty to cover himself in glory. On the negative side, he'd very nearly been killed by a bunch of commoners, and lost practically everything, including his spellbook and wand. Almost as bad, he'd needed Alice to save him. The Dark Mage's servants were supposed to fight for and protect him, but he was never supposed to be vulnerable. He tried to imagine his mother under similar circumstances. What came to mind was a picture of a whole lot of skeletons and zombies munching on raw peasant. That was how a Dark Mage was supposed to deal with things. Whenever he tried to compare himself to his mother, it made him feel utterly unworthy. His mother had always said he had great potential. She had actually told him that of all her children, he was the strongest raw talent. The ability to use magic was a rare trait in human beings. Perhaps 1 in 10,000 were born with it. Each individual blessed with that precious gift was also born with the capacity to wield a certain amount of mana and with a particular talent. Mana was a measure of magical energy. Every spell required a certain amount of mana to be worked. The greater the effect of the spell, the more mana it required. No different than the amount of muscle needed to move an object. The amount of mana needed to lift a feather was less than that needed to lift a book, which was less than what was needed to lift a boulder. Though the same spell remained exactly the same, different results required different amounts of energy. The amount of mana a magician could wield varied from one person to the next. There were some who would never be able to do more than work the most basic cantrips and minor spells.